wish this time were a little bit longer. If it were up to me, which very clearly it isn't, the time between Ascension and Pentecost would be a good 8 or 10 weeks. I mean, we have 4 weeks to wait for Easter. Advent, right? When we talk about what it means to expect Jesus and to wait for Christ to come as a little child among us and build the anticipation of that moment. And we have 6 weeks to prepare for Easter. Well, really to prepare for all of Holy Week and Easter, to ready our hearts and our minds and our spirits for that difficult and roller coaster journey that takes us from Palm Sunday and the triumph and the excitement through the farewells and the sorrow of Holy Thursday and the pain and the tragedy of Good Friday and that, again, very, very emptiness-laden expectation of Saturday until we celebrate again the joy of Easter on Sunday. I mean, we need some time to prepare for this, but here as we're waiting for Pentecost, for the coming of the Spirit, we get 10 days between Ascension and Pentecost. We get 10 days in which to sort of live in this reality where Jesus has been among us and we've experienced and we've learned and we've grown and we've come to believe and to understand at least in part, and then he disappears. And we're left waiting and wondering what happens next. We get 10 days, and really since we celebrate Ascension on a Sunday, we really only get 7 days to live in that moment. And yet, I think that's what most of faith is like. At least for me, I really resonate with those disciples standing on the hilltop. I can kind of picture them because I can really imagine that I'm standing there with them, you know? Jesus has taught so much. And I feel like I'm just beginning to get it. And he's giving all of this direction, like he might be going somewhere or leaving soon, but we try not to think too much about that. And he's giving all of these instructions, like, you know, wait for a little while and then go out, and then you're going to spread the good news, you're going to make disciples, you're going to be my witnesses, you're going to bring this message outside of Jerusalem and the holy places that you've known, to the people around you, to the people that you think are enemies, to the ends of the earth. And we're all kind of nodding along, going, okay, yeah, we can do that. We have you to help us out. We can do that. And then just like that, he just sort of, whoop, he's taken up, whatever that is, and he disappears, and then a cloud hides him from sight. And we all stand there like this. And we wait. You know, maybe if we can squint, we can still see him. Or maybe he'll come right back, right to that spot where he left from. So is that little speck up there, is that him or is that a... No, it's a bird. Oh, we wait. And I imagine they stood there for a good long time before they noticed these other guys robed in white. Hey, folks, what are you doing standing around? He said go. He's not going to come back right away. He'll come back in the same way that you saw him leave. Well, that means we should stand right here. So this is where we saw him leave. I wonder how many of them, after those men in robed in white went away, how many of them still stood there? I wonder how many of them came back the next day and stood there again. And the next day and the day after that, I wonder how many got disappointed after a couple days and stopped going to that hilltop, waiting for Jesus to come back right there. I wonder if some of them were late for Pentecost because they were still standing around waiting, looking up. Now what? What do we do after Jesus? He was right there. He was walking among us. He was with us. We understood what was going on. If we had a question, we could ask him. It was pretty simple. I mean, he went away for like 3 days, but, you know, we got through that, and it was okay, and now he's going to be with us again, and he's going to tell us everything we need to know. This spirit stuff sounds kind of vague. Like, if I don't understand a parable, I just say, hey, Jesus, what'd you mean by that stuff with the mustard seeds and stuff? If I don't understand what he means about spirit, or if I don't understand what the spirit's saying to me, I don't know what to say. I don't know what that looks like. So that's what faith is like to me, is sort of, I mean, I'd have made this the rest of the church year, is this waiting for the Holy Spirit, because when it comes, do we really know it? Do we recognize it? How do we know? I mean, Jesus said, go out and make disciples. Okay, but how do we do that? How do we make them? Out of what? Out of who? What do we teach them? What don't we teach them? What church committees do we put them on as soon as we possibly can? What do we do with disciples once we have one? And he said to, you know, to trust the Spirit. But I don't, can I see it? Can I touch it? Can I hear it? Really? I mean, I don't know. How do I know that it is the Spirit and not, you know, just me thinking about something? Or how do I know that it is telling me what I should do if I can't really ask for clarification? Or Jesus said, you know, essentially what's going to happen out of that, be the church. That's what, you know, the second half of the New Testament is about. It's about figuring out how to be the church. What does that look like? Who are the people of God supposed to be? How do we live in community together? How do we organize that? Who's in charge? Who's not in charge? What should be our focus? What's our mission statement? What does it look like when we're getting it right? What does it look like when we're getting it wrong? Is there right and wrong in being church? How do we live after Jesus? Once he's gone, and I mean, he's still with us, he's still in our hearts, he's still present with us, but once he's not there to ask a question to, we have to live our faith waiting. Waiting for the Spirit, waiting for confirmation, waiting for vision, waiting for inspiration, literally the coming of the Spirit, waiting for God. This expectation, this time of listening. I mean, we tend to try to go back to those holy places, those moments we've experienced God, and stand there looking up because we don't know what else to do. Because we're trying to recreate that moment. We don't want to be so lost in the moment that we miss the next thing that's happening. But at the same time, there's a waiting there. There's an expectation. When Jesus is coming back, is he coming back right now? Well, the Spirit is coming. Is it coming right here? Where do I need to be? How do I need to prepare myself? What do I need to do to listen? And you've only got 10 days to do it. And yet what we really have, we have our whole lives to do it as well. Because even in our post-Pentecost world, we're still living after Jesus. We're still trying to figure out who we are. We're still trying to figure out what God is calling us to do and what we should imagine and what we should vision and where God is leading us. One of my favorite movies when I was a little younger was Back to the Future. My mom's rolling her eyes because it was really quite a favorite movie. I'm sure she can recite most of it. So there's three of them, Back to the Future. So there's Back to the Future 1, where they go back in time, and then they have to get back to the future, which is 1985, the future, present at the time that the movie came out. And then there's Back to the Future 2. And in Back to the Future 2, they start out by going to the future, way to the future. They go to 2015. Ooh. Suddenly doesn't seem quite so far away. They go to 2015, and in 2015 there are all of these amazing things that no one in 1985 could possibly have imagined. I mean, if you want to pay for something in 2015, you just take your thumbprint and you push it down on a little indicator thing in the Jupiter, and it reads your thumbprint and it deducts whatever it is you're paying for from whatever bank account you have, wherever. There's a robot that pumps your gas. There are hoverboards, because of course we keep the skateboard since it's so cool. But now it doesn't need wheels, it hovers on the ground, and it's hot pink. Excellent. Excellent. And the cars, their wheels turn underneath and they float. And they zoom around and they fly in the sky. I mean, it's just, this is exactly what 2015 is going to be like. And there, you know, the video games make the stuff from 1985 look like just ridiculously children's toy-esque. Well, that part is pretty true. Ariana thinks that if you can't touch the screen and move things around, then she doesn't understand what's going on. She can do that on the phone. Why can't she do that on the computer or the television? You know, you have to use your hands. It's like a baby's toy. You know, that's what the kid says in 2015 about the 1985 video game. I mean, it's just amazing. It's out there. Nothing we could have imagined in 1985. And only a teeny, teeny portion of it comes true. No one's been wearing their pockets inside out or anything like that lately. So I don't know what's going on. Why did I bring that up, aside from my great love of Back to the Future? I'm so glad you asked. What an interesting segue, Pastor. In your bulletin, there's a newsletter. And the newsletter is dated, conveniently, 2015. Which, by the way, is a date I picked before I remembered the Back to the Future reference, so I was very proud of myself. And it has headlines, and it has a little bit of an intro text, teaser text, of things that haven't happened yet. Now, maybe some of them, like hoverboards, won't happen. Maybe some of them, like video games that make stuff in 1985 look outdated, will happen, but better or in a different way than we imagined. Maybe there are totally different things that should be imagined. So the stuff on that side is just to get you thinking. What sorts of things do you imagine in this waiting time? I'm giving you, like I often do, like I like to do, especially around holidays, I'm giving you homework again. Aren't you so glad you come to church so you can get homework? Your homework is to think about this, to pray about this, to wait with this idea. What is it that we might imagine for the future? What is it that God might be calling us to do? Where might the Spirit lead us? How do we live as church after Jesus? And if this isn't your church, then you can pretend and make your own church or make it about your home church or whatever, so that my family who's visiting from out of town don't feel like they get off scot-free and don't have homework, because that's important. What sorts of things will we look back on in now only 5 or 6 years and go, well, huh, that's where God was leading us. See, the thing about waiting is that waiting for God and waiting for inspiration is that we don't often recognize it until a little bit of hindsight has become available to us. A little time has passed, and then we say, oh, this is where God is leading us. And what we're going to do is when we come back next week and we talk about the coming of the Spirit, and we talk about what it is to be in vision, to see what the Spirit is telling us, or to go where God is leading us. You can bring your homework, or you can just have mentally been thinking about it. We want to talk about what some of our visions might be for next year, or for 5 years from now, or for 30 years from now. Who are we as Trinity United Methodist Church now, and in the time ahead? Where's God calling us? What are the headlines you would write 10 years from now or 5 years from now? What are the things that we're waiting to be shown? What are the things we're waiting for the Spirit to help us do? As we wait, let's not wait by standing around and looking up and trying to recreate the past. Let's wait by anticipating the future, by anticipating what it is that the Spirit might say to us, by listening, by praying for vision. Amen.